Hello, I'm Alexander Starr, History Project Coordinator for the Peter A. Allard School of Law History Project. Today, I am interviewing Mr. Brooke Campbell, class of 1966. Welcome.
Thank you.
Our first question, what drew you to attend the University of British Columbia for your undergraduate degree?
Well, I thought it was important to go to university, to have a ticket looking to the future for job opportunities. And many of our high school class were all coming out to UBC, and it seemed like a good idea at the time to apply.
And why did you choose to do law after your undergraduate degree?
I could see that it was a very competitive world out there, and it was useful to have a second degree. And my parents wanted me to have a profession. My father was a chartered accountant, and probably five of our high school class were all in the combined commerce law program, and it just seemed a great idea just to continue on.
When in the combined commerce law program, was there a transition between the commerce and the law, or was it very much all encapsulated together?
No, it was, you did 1 year of arts and then 3 years of commerce and then 3 years law. And you got your commerce degree after you completed your second year of law, and then obviously your law degree thereafter. And I think we had a class of about, we started off about 125. And I think there was at least 20 of our class that were in that combined program.
Mm-hmm. When you started the law program with those 20 people from commerce, did you notice that you ended up studying with those same people, or did that 125 law class become a new sort of family, new class?
Law became sort of a new family, but there was five of us from that commerce program that every Sunday evening through all 3 years, we would get together after dinner and spend 2 or 3 hours just reviewing the work that we had undertaken the previous week. So in a way, we bonded as a small group and completed our 3 years in that manner.
Do you remember sort of any traditions or events at the law school that you were part of, sort of like the law school organized, or that were a larger student activity?
I understand. Sure. Well, in my undergraduate, I applied and was a member of the University Naval Training Division, the Naval program, whereby you could get your commission in the Canada's Naval Reserve after your third year. And each summer, I went away with the Navy, and for my last 4 years, I taught accounting for the Navy back in Montreal at the Supply and Administration Base, HMCS Hochelaga. So Her Majesty the Queen used to pay me to drive to Montreal each summer to teach accounting. But also, when I got into second year law at UBC, I felt that one really had to do something athletically, and I decided, having helped a friend of mine raise money for a rugby tour to Britain the Christmas of 64-65, I got invited along, and so I tried out for the UBC rugby team that fall, and I started playing on the fifths, but by Christmas I had one game playing on the Thunderbirds. So I quite enjoyed actually playing rugby.
There's a strong tradition of rugby at UBC. Did you find it hard to balance being an athlete as well as studying law?
I won't say it's hard, but you had to be very disciplined. You know, like, there wasn't a lot of excess time, and I think that the having a physical activity like that with your studies, and many of us used to study at the library until 9 or 10 o'clock at night, having a break like either rugby practices or games was a great complement to the academic program.
Did you, as an athlete, did you go on the tour to England?
I did, actually, we spent 3 weeks touring England, Scotland, and Wales. Yeah. We only won 2 out of the 6 games, but it was an incredible experience.
Yeah.
And afterwards, in my last year, in 66, they brought 7-a-side rugby into the intramural program. And as you may know, 7-a-side yeah. rugby is now in the Olympics. And I ended up coaching the UBC rugby 7-a-side team. And in fact, we had 2 professors playing on our team. One was Tony Hooper,
yeah.
and who taught criminal law, and Noel Lyon, who taught constitutional law. And we ended up winning all the marbles, beating phys ed and the various fraternities and engineers to take the tournament. And we had a first year student who was from Great Britain,
oh.
Who was on the UBC track team. And I put him out on the wing, and he scored one of the winning tries in the semifinals. So it was a lot of fun. George Hungerford, actually, who was the Olympic rower, he was one of our props, and
okay.
he played very hard and his butt off, and he did very well. we had a very eclectic group of players.
And you coached them?
I coached them. I couldn't play because I was playing for the Birds.
Right.
But Tony Hooper, actually, we had him back for a reunion dinner in, I think, 2009, and he was our guest speaker. I tracked him down. He was no longer Tony Hooper, but he was Lord Sir Anthony Hooper.
Okay.
And he was on the British Court of Appeal. And he was quite a character because he had, as a professor here, he had a blonde beetle haircut, which back in 1965-66 was very much in style.
I can imagine. Did you have many female classmates in 1965?
Yeah, when we started off, we out of 125 students in first year, there were 4 women, and okay. I think all four graduated.
Yeah,
but it was a very different environment compared to today.
Yeah. I'm still curious about this intramural rugby team. Would you organize practices for everyone on campus?
Well, we posted a notice that there would be trials for the UBC 7-a-side team.
Yeah.
And at that time, UBC, the law school, had very competitive teams in the intramural programs. In fact, I think law school, for several of the years when I was there, won the hockey tournament because many of our a number of our students were from the prairies.
Mm-hmm.
And so UBC, the law school, always had a very competitive ice hockey team.
Mm-hmm.
But we only had a handful of practices. But then we had, I think we played 4 games in 4 days. It was a very intense regiment relating to the actual tournament itself.
Yeah. You were involved with the fraternities while at UBC. You were
When I in second year of university, a lot of my friends all sort of rushed to join a fraternity, which I did, and it was fun for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But then your interests sort of evolve, and you sort of don't put as much time
yeah.
into it. But it was good. It was a good initiation to that. Type of social activity.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, many of my classmates from the fraternity all went into the investment industry, which I did after graduation. So I've kept up in close touch with many of those individuals.
Mm-hmm. Was there any professors or mentors you believe had a strong influence on your development at school?
Well, I guess our year was very lucky in first year in having Dr. McIntyre,
mm-hmm.
Who taught us torts, and he was ailing actually at that time. In fact, he died from a very nasty form of cancer. I think it was in February of 64. And but he was such an interesting and well-spoken individual, and seeing him persevere through all his challenges, his medical challenges, was a great inspiration, actually. And he had an international reputation in teaching the law of torts. And as you may know, his son came on faculty immediately thereafter.
Was there, with the professors, was there a lot of, was it a more of a collegial environment, or did it feel very like the professors were separate from the students?
I would say it was very much a collegial atmosphere. And in fact, I remember vividly in our third year, we had a month before final exams, we had our class had a dinner dance party, and I think virtually all our professors attended. It was, and similarly, the fact that we had two professors turning out for the rugby team was evidence that there was a great camaraderie within the law school at that time. It was probably a lot more informal than it is today.
Yeah. And then, so after law school, you used your law degree to enter business in banking and finance.
I graduated from law. I didn't really have an intent on articling. I did quite respectably, I consider, anyway. I think from law school, I learned that how to get a hell of a lot of work done in a relatively short period of time. And also The fact that you have the discipline of taking a large amount of information and having to can it down to just three or four lines really stood me very well when in later life, when I was writing up sales material for the marketing of securities, you quickly realize that it's very tough to get people to even read half a page. And if you can't make your point in three or four sentences, you're wasting your time.
Yeah.
So from law school and having canned down hundreds and hundreds of, if not thousands of cases, that was a very, very good discipline for what I did in my later life.
Yeah.
When I graduated, I had considered to article for a chartered accountancy, and I had articles all lined up with McDonnell Curry, which became part of Price Waterhouse, but then when I got back to Montreal for my last summer with the Navy, I realized that I was exhausted from having written my last set of exams, and I thought I would rather make some money and live a little more comfortably, and so I knocked on doors of the major chartered banks, and I joined the Bank of Montreal. With whom I worked for 10 years, seven of which were in Montreal. And I was mainly at that stage in corporate lending. But it was a very good foundation for what I did thereafter in investment banking.
I want to just quickly ask a question, I guess, about your canning. Nowadays, students will trade cans or pass them off to the next year. Was there a lot of sharing of cans and notes?
Yeah, there was a market. There was a black market in buying canned notes. But I would say that maybe a third of the class used them, or used them effectively. But it was a source of information. But many of the professors were onto that, and so it's. Yeah, the big thing about law school, unlike the undergraduate in commerce, is that for law school you really had to be prepared to discuss cases that would be discussed at your next lecture. So it was a really very different approach to learning, in that you had to be well prepared in anticipation of a class, rather than going to a class and then doing work on that subject thereafter.
You spent some time in Montreal. what drew you back to the West Coast? How did you end up back in Vancouver?
Well, I was very lucky. Well, what drew us back, we had two young children, and we wanted to get back to where their grandparents and Janet, my wife, and I, our parents lived. That was the major draw. But I was very lucky that with the bank, I was able to get a transfer to Vancouver. The district manager in Vancouver, I had worked for in Montreal, and when an opening came up, he asked me if we'd like to move out to the coast, and it was quite fantastic. And I worked for the Bank of Montreal for another 3 years, again at main office here in corporate lending. And but when they wanted me to go back to Toronto, that's when I started thinking about other opportunities here on the coast. And I joined the investment firm Pemberton Securities, where one of my classmates, Fred Wright, was head of corporate finance. And I joined him back in 1976.
Vancouver was a growing town at the time. Did you stay at Pemberton Investments for a while?
Yeah, well, I was a director and vice president with them for 13 years. We got bought out by the Royal Bank in 1989. And I then joined another regional firm, Odlum Brown, where I was a director and vice president for the next 19 years. So I was very lucky that I was able to combine sort of my professional life with the site where we enjoyed a very good recreational activities with our children. So it's I consider myself very lucky.
You were an executive at Pemberton and then at Odlum Brown after having worked at the Bank of Montreal. Was there a reason that you sort of ended up in regional firms rather than continuing on in a national one?
Well, I found with the Bank of Montreal, I think from the level of a teller to the chairman of the board, I think there was perhaps 34 layers of management. And I think my personality was much more of being a gunslinger. Mm-hmm. And whereas an investment firm, I think there's only three levels of management. And it was a lot more fun. You could show more initiative under modest guidance in putting underwritings together, putting deals together. And it was just a very different, work environment. Yeah. And also, if you did well, there was much more scope for being rewarded financially with the investment firm rather than with the bank.
I guess having grown up in Vancouver, I know a little bit about Odlum Brown, and I know that they sponsored the tennis. They had the tennis open.
That's correct.
Yeah, was that an interest to you as well?
Or? Well, I'm a member up at Hollyburn, where the tournament is held, the firm was founded over 90 years ago by General Victor Odlum, and the matter of integrity and hard work, I think, which he brought to the firm permeates the firm today, and it was a very good place to work. I retired, I guess it was 8 years ago, and I enjoyed my work there. And how that might tie into law school is that in putting financial transactions together, you're always dealing with either contracts or in the case of public distribution of securities, prospectuses, which you draft up in conjunction with the lawyers for both the company and the underwriters, so that the discipline of knowing if and when you might have a problem, who to go to get an answer on a very cost-effective basis,
yeah.
As well as just the whole matter of drafting was the fundamentals you certainly learned in law school.
Comparing the law school at UBC from when you were a student to sort of what you see today in the world and what you know about Allard, what do you appreciate, I guess, about the school as it was and I guess what it is today?
Well, it's a very different environment. Graduating in the mid-60s, there were so many more job opportunities available, whereas today it's a lot more difficult. And I would suggest that there are far too many log students graduating across Canada in relation to legitimate opportunities, even getting, you know, worthwhile articles. So I would say that today I think it's a class of around 200 or so. It's a lot tougher today for students compared to in at our time. In the 60s, we took in 125 in first year. I think we graduated 84. Whereas nice. Today, I think you may take in 200. You don't lose that many over the 3 years. Okay. It's tougher to get into law school today, but in the 60s, it was harder to stay in law school once you got in. But I would say, you know, to students that, you know, if you're going to make that investment in time and money for your 3 years of law school, you better be well motivated and have a very good reason as to what you want out at the end of it, because it's a tough goal.
Did your children follow in your footsteps? Did any of them become lawyers?
We have a son and daughter. Both of them graduated from University of Victoria, and both of them went into marketing.
Okay.
They got their degree in arts from UVic. Our son played rugby for Canada and on the junior teams, and then both of them went to BCIT thereafter and took a diploma course in marketing. Our son is now living in, and family are living in Calgary. He trades natural gas contracts for a major private company. And our daughter is, she worked in drawing up websites for companies and is currently an art entrepreneurial business person doing landscape design.
Wow.
So it's, they didn't go into a profession like law, but they both, you know, went to university and followed their own ideas, which as a parent you can be very proud, but never try to force them into something that they're not interested in.
Yeah, that sounds like they've made exciting careers even.
Yeah, and we have four grandchildren, and they're all, our granddaughter here just came back from a soccer tournament in Southern California, and our granddaughter in Calgary played in an international soccer tournament in Sweden last year. So they've all done very well, but not playing rugby.
Yeah, is it? Do you think it's? I always think it's exciting to see the, I guess, like the passions continue through generations, and like you were very interested in sports. You played varsity, and now your grandkids are playing on soccer teams that travel and stuff. Do you think are they excited when grandpa comes to watch, or are they a little intimidated, nervous?
You pick your games, but you don't try to, you let them do their thing, and you're on the sidelines. But secretly, you're very proud of them.
Yeah. I guess thinking a bit back to law, can you describe any notable colleagues you've had?
Well, we had a very eclectic class. I think eight of my classmates all became judges. Probably, I would say, Ed Chiasson, just recently retired from the BC Court of Appeal. I would say on an academic legal perspective, he was certainly one of the most outstanding of the judges. But the most, I would say the most outstanding individual was Wally Opal, who practiced law. He went on the BC Supreme Court and then Court of Appeal, and thereafter went into politics and became Attorney General for BC. And more recently, he chaired the Picton Inquiry on the missing women. And besides being a respectable basketball player, he I would say from the point of view of his contribution to the community, he's been quite outstanding. But we also had two of our top two students all became professors in law at here at UBC, Barry Slutsky and Sarge Berner. And so, my colleague Fred Wright, he became president of Pemberton Securities and did very well for himself. Kyle Mitchell became president of the Tanton Mitchell Group, which was the leading senior executive placement firm here in British Columbia and Western Canada. So there's been, you know, and there's been people who've done very well. I would also add Len Doust. Yeah. Len was probably the most outstanding courtroom litigation lawyer of our class. He had a nickname as being the Phantom. In fact, we had two Phantoms in our class, Rod Johnson, who was from Paul River. He seldom, if ever, attended less lectures, and Len Doust even less so. And both of them did well, and it was very curious how their lives evolved.
With having such a long career and with such a variety of employers and such, this one says, which personal or career accomplishment are you most proud of? But I'm sure you have a couple. So are there a couple experiences and accomplishments that you're proud about?
Yeah, well, I might mention three. Okay. 12 years ago, I was asked by Dean Muzica, who was head of the Sauder School of Business, to go on a committee of three to do an external accreditation of the Sauder School of Business. And I was joining two deans of business schools in the United States. And we spent 3 months doing interviews of faculty, students, graduate students, and the dean to come up with recommendations as to the direction of the business school, but also to provide a third-party assessment of the program at UBC. For example, if a student in North Carolina was thinking of coming to UBC and they wanted a third-party assessment of the business school, they could go to this accreditation website. And that was very interesting because I realized that there's not that much different between doing due diligence on a faculty like the Commerce School at UBC as doing a due diligence on a company that might be wishing to raise capital. So it was that was worthwhile. Secondly, when I was at Odlum Brown, I was given tremendous scope as to what I could do. And in my last 7 years, I set up and ran an inter-university college portfolio management competition where students had $2 million for a four-month period. It was fictitious money, which they managed according to a set of rules. And we had about 1,000 students in 20 institutions across the province. And it gave people a taste of what the stock market was all about. and how the market can go up and down often with no apparent reason. And that was really a lot of fun. But the I would say the one home run I hit was just 3 years ago when a group of us actually from UBC would get together for lunch out at Horseshoe Bay at Troll's Restaurant. And we talked about the problems with, you know, we were all in our early 70s, and the problem of taking money out of your RIF, which is evolves from your RRSP. And there was a formula that was set up in 1991, which forced you to take money out so that it peaked in your mid-80s and then dissipated as you got into your early 90s. Well, since 1991, people were living 5 years longer. And also, in 1991, you could buy Government of Canada bonds that were yielding 8 to 10%, whereas today it's under 3%. So I went to our Member of Parliament, John Weston, and said, look, how do we change the rules? And he said, you want to put together a committee, have a broad-based, not tied to any financial institution. You want to have a public forum, and you want to have a petition, and you want to have a two-pager a presentation to the Federal House Finance Committee. Mm-hmm. We did all those things, and we had a standing room only crowd for our public forum. And with our recommendations, John Weston went to other members of Parliament across Canada to get support so that it could be seen that it's not just a local issue. And in fact, we got our submission into the federal cabinet, the former government. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the Prime Minister approved it, and it was included in the last Conservative budget. And they basically took our factors that we recommended, and it was implemented at that time, such that now Canadians have at least 10% in additional RIF income, and that meaningful RIF income flows mm-hmm. through well into your 90s. So it was a major success story, and we had. Over half of our 12 committee members were graduates of UBC. We had five from the investment industry, two lawyers, two chartered accountants, an actuary, and a pension fund trustee. Wow. So we had it was amazing. It was that has saved or has generated hundreds of millions of dollars in additional retirement income yeah. for Canadians.
That's a I remember reading an article, I think, in the Vancouver Sun or online about that, and I was going to ask you, because the Sun article just sort of stopped. It was like, mm-hmm. we're getting a group together, and we're going to talk about this, but it never followed through and said what happened.
We did it, and we followed through.
Congratulations.
But in business, when I was at Pemberton's, I raised the capital for SkyTrain and for mm-hmm. Financing a number of the BC ferries, and we were co-managers for General Motors and many of the local companies here, Woodward's, Versatile Industries, Bank of BC. Pemberton's was very much focused on Western Canada.
That's incredible. Yeah, those are all, could spend a whole other interview just asking about that. Do you miss the law and that, or do you find ways to sort of include it?
I think you miss the people.
Yeah.
And I've always kept busy. I've been on the investment committee for the YMCA on their foundation as a trustee for the West Van Community Foundation for the YMCA. I've always had some community involvement, but also, changing the RIF withdrawal rules, that was 2 years of mm-hmm. pretty solid work. So with many committee meetings, Larry Fournier, in fact, who was a chartered accountant and graduated in commerce from UBC, he put together all the numbers. And I guess what you realize that in putting a group like that together, everyone can make a contribution. We're ready to appear before the federal cabinet if required to answer questions. So we had people in our committee, all of whom had dealt with seniors with the problems of managing their retirement income.
One sort of wrap up or just a final question is, do you have any advice you'd like to share for law students who would listen to this interview?
Oh, well, I think once you make your commitment to come to law school, go at it 130%. That you've got 3 years of your life to make a name for yourself. But I would also look at activities outside of the law school to complement your studies. Employers are looking for people who can relate well to other people, and to have a summary of your life. It's great to have things in which possibly you've excelled either in athletics or student politics or community service. It's really important to have a broad approach to your education, of which law school will be one important component.
Thank you for coming in and being interviewed today. I don't have any other questions. Is there anything you would like to add?
Well, one other thing, it would be that our class has been quite active over the years in having reunions, mm-hmm. and our last two were, our 50th was last year, and we did also one in 2009, and we've had a very strong success rate. Almost two-thirds of those still living have attended our functions, and it's been a lot of fun putting that together, and in fact, for those activities, we also included the professors that we had at that time, and a number of them have attended. And it's good to keep in touch with your classmates, because it's so interesting seeing, you may have a class of, I think we graduated 84, and I would say that everyone has gone off in different directions, and it's really interesting just finding out what people have done.
I'm excited for that for my class in, you know, 20 years, 30 years from now. All right, well, thank you again, and this concludes our interview for the Peter A. Allard School of Law History Project.